At Midway USA, we know the AR-15 is one of the most popular rifles in modern American history. Known for its modularity and widespread use, it's often considered essential to any gun collection. The essential things you need to run an AR-15 are usually always in stock during shortages, things like magazines and 5.56 ammo. Whether you're looking to buy a new AR-15 or buy parts for your modern sporting rifle, log on and for just about everything for the outdoors, shop MidwayUSA.com. Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why MidwayUSA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
Well, this sucks.
Yeah. So when I asked my doctor about it, he kind of just said, well, no shit. Alcohol influence or creates, what the hell did he say? Something in your joints and then just adds to it.
I think you need to find a new doctor. I don't think that guy knows what he's talking about. He doesn't have teenagers. That's for damn sure.
I had a bad shoulder a year and a half ago. I had to get surgery. It was the best thing I ever did.
Oh, is that right?
Oh yeah. Like I'm 100%. I had a 4-centimeter tear in my rotator cuff.
Ooh.
Oh.
For like 10 years, I lived with it.
Really? How long did that take to rehab?
You know what? I was back to full duty in 3.5 months.
That's impressive.
Yeah. Like the doctor said that there's no way, but my physio cleared me for full weights after 3 months. And then I went back to work after 4, like in full duties.
Wow. Wow. That's crazy. You're a big time shooter too. So that's crazy. So you just lived with that pain. That's kind of what I'm going through right now. I've had ongoing left shoulder pain, and then I did something at work on Monday, and now it feels like a noodle. So,
well, you know, I'm super athletic growing up, like playing junior hockey and then baseball and stuff like that. And I truly think I heard it playing baseball years ago. And then I went in, as I got older, got into competitive slow pitch and never made it any better. And I remember when I was in the gym at work when I heard it the final time. And I said to the surgeon after, I said, if he could tell if it was an old injury or a new injury. And he said it was kind of a combination of both. It was like a long-term tear. And then at the gym, I just toasted it. And I lived with it. Like I said, the last year and a half, it was almost debilitating. Like, thank goodness. Like, it's funny because it was anything over the level. So anything like I mean, I would be literally like this if it was over there, but I could still pull my bow back because anything below my shoulder, I could still sort of manage to do it. But long story short, is the best thing I ever did because, and the thing that COVID actually saved me in a way because I went to physio before and he gave me a whole bunch of exercises to do before the surgery. That was the key. And so I had basically 8 months I did every day religiously. I did those exercises. And then when I had my surgery, I did the exercises that they gave me after. And I truly believe that's why I came back. Like I'm over 100% now.
Oh, that's good.
That's awesome.
Yeah. That's what I need. I need that knee surgery. I need a whole bunch of stuff.
They did my bicep tendon while they're at it. Like I didn't even ask for them, but like I got a video of my surgery and my bicep tendon, which is kind of cool. It's like super round like that and thick. Yeah. It looked like an old frayed rope. There was pieces all over it. So they cut that off and fixed that while they're at it too.
Oh, that's a bonus.
Yeah. I got to get my left shoulder is good, but my bicep's really bad. So I have to get the same thing done to my bicep on the left side.
Yeah. I guess if they're going to be in there, they might as well just fix everything. So, that's good. That's good. That's awesome. One thing you're just explaining about drawing your bow back. It's funny. You see some guys drawing their bow back and their elbows, you know, way above their shoulder line. You're like, oh dude, what are you doing? That's going to kill your shoulder. You do that 100 times a day.
That's exactly it.
Yeah. It'll only take that one injury too in your shoulder and it'll kick you back from trying to be macho and pulling back the extra 10 pounds, you know, like pulling that 80-pound bow back. I mean, like, that's right. I can do that. When it's like, if you pull that 70-pound bow back and it's like nothing in comparison, but
you know, the things that brought me to my knees worse than anything was the, you know how when you kind of trip or you slip or something, you kind of go like that, that would bring me to my knees. I remember one time at work, I was walking up to the house with my partner, and we're kind of going up kind of fast because we had to get into the house quickly, and I slipped on the sidewalk as I was going up, and I kind of caught myself.
Yeah.
I literally sat there for 5 minutes, and before I could catch my breath, it hurt so bad. That's when I decided to go, and finally that when that happened, I was like, I have to get this fixed.
Yeah, that was the final straw. Yeah.
Kevin, did you ever hurt your shoulder before, like rotator cuff or anything?
I did play in hockey. I hurt it. I dislocated it playing hockey, and then, yeah, probably laying you out probably when I did it.
I still remember that. That was a long time ago. 30 years ago?
Yeah. You haven't been the same since.
Yeah, that's because you hit a rock wall. That's why. Yeah. Rock wall just tipped over.
I love hearing that.
So, Muck, thanks for hopping on the podcast today. I know you and I, we've chatted back and forth a few times. We just, you know, work, life, everything, it just gets busy. But it's nice we finally got a chance to line something up. So thanks for coming on the show.
No problem.
So I kind of want to talk Bears. You know, this is the season of spring Bears, and I know you got a lot of experience with Bears, and you have kind of something that Pete and I don't have. Come from British Columbia here, we're not allowed to bait Bears. So I kind of want to talk about, you know, baiting Bears. You know, another couple of things I want to talk about that are really important is field judging and shot placement. And I know, you know, you're an experienced bear hunter, so maybe we can talk about that today. But before we get into that, maybe you can just talk about yourself, kind of like your background and all that stuff.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on. Two things are kind of dear to me, and bears and elk are kind of my thing. That's what I sort of cut my teeth on when it comes to, and a little bit history of me, from Regina, Saskatchewan, born and raised Weyburn, southeastern Regina.
Oh, yeah.
When I was in my early 20s, I was working in the oil patch like everybody does in Saskatchewan, southeast anyways, and I got really slow, and I was looking for something else to do, and I took up a guiding school in the Yukon, and I flew to the Yukon, never even rode a horse in my life before, and had to learn how to shoe horses and stuff like that. And then I got a job in British Columbia with the outfitter from the guide school. And I was there for 15 plus years as they're kind of like one of their main elk guides and stuff like that. And in the meantime, I'd come back and work in the oil patch. And then every year I'd go and guide in BC, Fort St. John, Fort Nelson country. And that's kind of where I learned to be a good hunter. And of course, down here we have whitetail and lots of bird hunting and stuff like that. And one of my passions is hunting bears. And I mean, we can talk about that, but in Saskatchewan here, that's probably one of the, if somebody's looking to get into hunting, that's one of the easiest things in Saskatchewan to get into, is because we can bait them here. And as long as you can find a parcel of land to put a bait on that you're not sort of infringing on anybody else, it's truly is one of the easier hunts, because you try to bring them to you. You don't have to drive around or do a ton of scouting for them. Yeah. And so right now, currently I'm 18 years at the Regina City Police. I'm a corporal there, and I say now that I've been here so long, I sort of work for my days off, and my all year I'm doing something to do in the outdoors. I'm kind of already setting myself up for retirement, and that, the, you know, things like this and maybe a little guiding again in the, when I'm done retiring policing. And so, yeah, anything to do with the outdoors, I'm pretty active with it, and big time into shooting sports as well, primarily archery. And that's kind of me. Yeah. That's currently in Regina, and, not a big fan of the big city, but I like policing here. And any chance I can, I get into the woods.
Well, I didn't realize that you, you'd spent some time out in BC doing some elk guiding. Cool.
Yeah. Fort St. John, the outfit I worked for about 14 years or 13 years was called Musqua Safari. Gary Vince, well-known outfitter, kind of a pioneer in the north there. And he got bought out by one of his neighbors, Kevin Olmsted. And I think it's called Profit River or something like that, outfitters. And I worked for them for 3-4 years. And then my kids needed me around a little bit more and had to kind of shut her down. And then I did some freelance videoing where I'd travel around North America and do some filming for guys and stuff like that. And now I sort of just kind of do my own thing.
To be honest, I didn't realize there was that big of a bear population in Saskatchewan. It's when you think like being from BC here, I mean, we've got mountains and trees and everything, right? And like, obviously I've been to Saskatchewan. It's just, you know, it's just a little bit different out there. So you just don't really think about bears when you think about Saskatchewan.
Yeah, you know, growing up, I didn't either until I got older and really saw that they're problematic, especially with the farm fringe bears. We do have lots of forest and or I don't know what's called, the Canadian Shield, and there's a ton of bears up there. So I know there's lots right. of outfitting, you know, kind of in the shield, but the forest fringe bears is where primarily most of the guys like me do that, because you don't have to travel too far into the forest to set a bait.
Yeah,
so
yeah, that's cool.
So how far up north are you going then from like Regina? Like, how much farther north till you start being able to hunt bears pretty successfully?
Well, where I have my baits currently right now, from my doorstep to my first bait is 3.5 hours.
Okay. Oh, yeah, wow. So bit of a drive.
Bit of a drive, yeah. Like, actually, I just set my baits on Saturday because we literally just had snow. We had snow here until a week ago. And finally, we got some double digits, and most of the snow went away, so I had to get them in. Normally, I have my baits in, you know, as soon as you can around April 15th, but I didn't get them in till like Saturday. So it's actually killing me right now to have them sitting there soaking, wondering what's on camera. Cause yeah. I have one bear there, fellas. I don't know if you have seen them. I've been kind of posting it lately on my Facebook, but I got one there that's 550, 575, 100 pounds. So like it's itching at me to see if he's back.
Yeah, no doubt.
If it's the one I'm thinking of, he looked like a good tank.
Oh, a buddy of mine, Blair Mitchell, he's been guiding bears for like 35 years. He killed a 22 incher a couple years ago. And he swears that this bear that I have on there is going to go 22 and a half or more and be 575 pounds, he figures.
Wow.
That's a big black bear.
I mean, there's a bit of a story with that. I passed him up last year by accident. It was the first sit of the year for me, and he came in. I knew it was a big bear, but I was like, nah, I'm not gonna shoot this bear, because he didn't quite come to the barrel. There was about four or five, you know, 150, 200 pounders at the bait, and he came in, and I had a buddy with me, and I looked like, that's a big bear right there. And we nicknamed this bear War Pig, and because he has a really short snout like a pig, and so we called him War Pig. And I had him on camera for 4 years, but he never once daylighted himself, and so I never set eyes on him. And he came out, and I didn't know it was him. So I passed it up first night. I had no intentions of shooting a bear. I was kind of hoping to shoot him in the rut. And when I went back and watched the video, I couldn't believe it. It was War Pig that came in, and I could easily got him because he was about 10 yards away at one point. But anyway, so him and I have a date this year.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, hopefully it works out for you. So you do your baits. So I guess it's important. You got to make sure the snow is gone. No snow when you start doing your bait process.
Well, you know, as long as you can get to your spot, the bears, once they start coming out, like, see up there, the reason everything's so late is like, they're still in their dens because they had 2-3 yeah. feet of snow, and they're just, you might get a bear that had a den that was maybe accessible and was out early, but for the most part, they just started coming out. And so you can get them in there early as long as you can get to your baits. Like, my quad doesn't have tracks or anything, so I pretty much, or I didn't use a snowmobile either, but as soon as you can get to your bait, you get her out there. I like to get out there as soon as you can, because they as soon as that smell hits the air, you're drawing all those bears in there.
I have absolutely zero idea how to bait a bear. So you just take them with a barrel, and you're just poking a bunch of holes in it. You have a lid that you can seal down, and you're just throwing your food in there, and just chain it, strap it to a tree. Like, obviously I've seen videos of bears, you know, rummaging at the, these big barrels they have, but just talk about like what you do for your setup, like what you're throwing your food into, what kind of food, that kind of thing.
Yeah, like I do a couple of seminars where I try to teach newbies or people that's never hunted the bears before, because like, basically I want them to learn from my mistakes, because I say the bear is one of the easiest to hunt, but you got to do your homework just like any other species you're going to hunt. And generally what you got to do is you got to pick a place to hunt. And here, like, I have the fortunate luck to have private land that I can hunt on. So I have exclusive to that area. Backed up to the provincial forest. And so basically what I do is, now with the Google Earth or with the iHunter or anything like that, you always kind of sort of plot where you want to hunt. And the first thing I tell people when they ask about baiting bears is always find a food source, or sorry, a water source, because early season bears love to follow like creek and ponds. And, you know, we get tons and tons of beaver ponds, and the bears just love those. They fall. They have a couple of reasons why they follow the water sources is one, for obvious reasons for the water, but soon as the grass and dandelions and everything start to turn green, they want to supplement their diet with greens. So you'll always see them eating on, and of course near water is where it always goes green first. And so they're always following those. And then of course, beaver is like their number one sort of meat animal or whatever. And they love the taste of beaver. So there again, if they can snack on a beaver or find one that's dead or something like that, that's perfect for them. So the first thing I do is always plot where I'm going to go. So if I was to find a new bait site, the first thing I always look for is a water source. And once I do that, then I will generally try to go to, here in Saskatchewan, we have terrible hazel brush. So you have to find basically a spruce patch or something like that, or green trees that doesn't have a ton of hazel brush, because that's a bear hunter's nightmare. Because right now it's not too bad. You know, you have to kind of trip and stumble through the hazel brush, but soon as it starts to leave out, it's literally a jungle in there. So you have to try to find a place. I always look for spruce, and that's where I set up next to a water source. And then as far as the bait goes, I have a very sort of specific way I do it. So when they've come out of the den, they have what they call a plug in their butt, and they have to get rid of that plug, just like any bear species that hibernates has that plug, and that keeps them from defecating inside their den. So they have to get food that's easily digested that'll get that plug out. And I mean, it's emerald green when you see it. Like you'll see it at the bait sites all the time when the plug comes out. So they want some easy eating at first. They can't go right to meat really hard. So lots of guys will fill their barrels with meat. And the bears won't eat very much when they first come to the barrel. So what I like to do is I try to get some beavers for the smell to draw them in. And then what I generally like to do is just go something nice and light. And actually the easiest thing to get rid of the plug is like fryer grease. So I run a barrel with a couple of beavers to start. And I have what they call a beaver basket, where they can't get the beaver out, but they can smell it. And once the winds start to whip, it draws those bears in, so that they'll eat at the barrel with beavers. And then I have a barrel with grain and grease, and the grease usually, like this time of year, you'll sit in the stand and the grease will leak out of the barrel, and they just lick it like it's water. And then it helps them get that plug out. And as soon as they get that plug out, then they're in the heat, their food mode. So they kind of come out of the den, and they're really, really hungry. But they can't eat like really anything until they get rid of that plug. So, they'll come to your bait. They generally won't eat a whole lot. So I run beavers, oats with fryer grease, and donuts from a donut store that at the end of the day, when they have to throw them out, I collect them. And that's basically what I do. And then as soon as we move a couple weeks closer to June, I go exclusively grain and donuts, and I don't even mess around with the beavers.
Oh yeah. Wow. There's a lot to it.
There is.
Not like just throwing a bunch of food out and hoping they hit it, but yeah.
You know, throwing a bunch of food out will work. And when I first started bear hunting, that's all I did. I'd go to the local butcher and got the scrap, and that works very well. But I find, knowing now what I do know about bears and really getting into the way that, the way they eat and all that kind of stuff, I know that they have a process to the way they do it. And the big bears are the ones that you want to draw in, and you really have to bring those in with the sweets. They love the sweets, especially the big bears. They love the sweets.
Okay. What kind of sweets are we talking here?
Well, I use Tim Hortons donuts. I don't know if I should have said the name, but
we're all from Canada, so everyone's their first thought when they think donuts is going to be Tim Hortons.
Yeah, like I have a friend that owns a Tim Hortons, and they have to dispose of it anyway. So I just I go there with bags and collect the old donuts and stuff. And so that And like you can buy tubs of icing sugar, and that's what they really like, that icing sugar. And all you got to do is look on any bear site, and they have like licorice and trail mix or just anything that'll spur them on. I personally just use donut and then oats with fryer grease. I got a buddy that owns a restaurant that collects the grease for me as well. So
yeah, I guess whatever you can get. I mean, if you're getting stuff for free, that's the way to go. Cause I imagine if you're baiting, you know, a few 600 pound bears or 500 pound, even a 300 pound bear, it's going to add up, plus your fuel and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. I was just going to say that. So when you can't bait every day, like I'm not an outfitter or anything like that, so I'm not at my baits every day. So I am very kind of meticulous the way I run my barrels. I don't have big holes in my barrels so that they really have to work with it. Like, yeah, if you put any kind of holes in your barrel, 150 pound bear will clean you out in an evening. Like they'll tip the barrel, spill it on the ground, and then they'll eat it until the big ones come. And then, so if I'm not going to be there, like right now I set my bait on Saturday and now I have to work, and then I'm going to go back after work. My barrels are going to be empty. And if you have big holes in them, they'll clean you out in one night, and those barrels will sit empty for a week, and you can't do that.
Yeah. Right. So ideally, how good is it? Like, what would be if you had the ability to do, what would, like, obviously I don't imagine you want to be hitting that bait every day, cause then your smell is going to be there too much. Kind of like a deer stand or I mean, maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Yeah. You know what? You actually, the more that you can be there, the more the bears are familiar with your smell.
Oh yeah.
And there's a couple things actually that they learn about. They learn your smell. They learn when you're in the stand, and they hear your quad. And the more that you can be in the actually stand, the better your success is, because, and I'm sure a lot of bear hunters that have good bears does this. I enjoy just sitting there and watching them, and I actually name all my bears. You know how people will manage their whitetails, and you know, from year to year to year, and they'll give them names. I do that with my bears. I know almost every bear that comes in from the year before, and so they get to know me, and it's amazing, and it truly is amazing how they are so in tune to when you come and go from the bait, and it's almost like clockwork when they'll show up. So my nephew shot a really nice boar a couple of years ago, and it was in the rut, and that bear, he knew that I came to bait my beats at 11 o'clock day, and he would come in while I was baiting. And normally don't get to see that bear, but because he was rutting and he was coming to the bait, he was like 5-10 yards away from me when I was filling the barrel. So I said to my nephew, let's drive out with the quads, you know, 400-500 yards. We'll walk back in, and we'll you got to shoot that bear. Like, he's 350. And so that's what we did. We snuck back in, and he shot him right from the ground, right from the trail. And it was pretty exciting. But it's funny how they can hear you. Like this war pig that I keep referring to, he knows when I'm in the stand. Like he let his guard down a few times last year, but he only daylighted him once when I was in the stand, and the rest of the times were when I wasn't there. So he knows, like, his bedding area is so close that he knows when I'm coming and going. And I'm hoping he can slip up again. But my point being is that the more you can be in the stand and get your scent there, they get used to that.
Right. Right.
Now, saying that, I'm picturing you guys coming in with all this food.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm picturing it from BC with all our grizzlies and everything. So have you had any like crazy experiences or close calls or some super aggressive bears or like anything? Like, you're basically ringing the dinner bell. You're bringing up to us where we're kind of like, no, it's all right. You guys stay over there.
Well, you know, I guided in BC for, like I said, 15 years. So I know exactly what you're talking about when it comes to grizzlies. Like that's the least animal we want to see when we're guiding. But here, you know, when I first started hunting black bears years ago, man, I was scared of them, and rightfully so. They can be very aggressive, but I've been doing this so long now that now I'm not going to say I'm complacent with them, but I'm definitely not scared of a black bear. And I've had so many experiences where I've been literally feet. Like, there was a cinnamon bear that would not leave my barrel, and I actually had to fill the barrel with it like 2 feet away from me. And I just kept kind of swatting at it, but I was stuck. I was either like, go away and not fill the bait or fill it and try to scare it. So I tried everything, but And I know lots of times people think I'm crazy, but I give them enough respect that I've never been, but just once, I had a sow tree me, just 2 years ago. It's funny because I was waiting to hunt that night, and actually I harvested my really good bear, that night. But what happened was, is the people I stay with, we were having lunch and we were just visiting, and it was really nice. I think it was 26 above, and I was wearing shorts. So I was just waiting for the evening to hunt. So we were sitting there having a late lunch, and I said, "Oh, I forgot my cards," because I always hunt morning and evening. Like, I'm one of those guys that sneaks in at 3 a.m. and then sits till 7, and then I kind of take the day to sleep. And I'm like, I forgot to grab my cards. So I hopped on the quad, and I already baited for the day, because I bait usually around that 10:30, 11 o'clock. And I said to the folks that I was with, I got to run in and grab the cards out of this one. At that time, I was only running one bait. And I jumped on the quad and I bombed in there short, everything. And I had this one sow. And fellas, I'm not kidding when I'm saying she was 500 pounds. I'm not even kidding. Like, I don't know how many times, yeah, early morning, late night, she almost got shot because she was so big, but she was very predictable. She would bring her little, like, she had the little honey bear cubs, and she would put them in the same big spruce tree, and three of them would go up the tree. Then she would come in and she would dominate that bait. I had so many trail cameras of her thinking that was a great big boar, but it wasn't. She was like close to 450, 500 pound sow. And she literally destroyed my barrel. That's how aggressive she was. And any bear that came around, she would chase him off. And it was actually a bit frustrating, but usually she was a morning and an evening bear, and not middle of the day. So anyways, I drove my quad in there and I was just tooling along, and all I'm going to do is go get my cards. And it's not uncommon for me to run into bears at my bait during the day, but usually they're just small. So I come flying in there, and I come around the trail, and I do the same thing. Like, I come in the same trail every time, and I bait the exact same way. So I come in and out, and I come flying in there, and I saw her and the cubs right at the barrel. And when I scared her, the cubs went up the tree where the barrel was. And then she turned around and kind of ran about 25 yards. So I just slammed on the brakes right there. And my camera was about 3 feet to the right on a tree of where my tree stand was. So I'm like, okay, I'm just going to jump off, scoot over to the camera real quick. And I knew the cubs were up the tree, but I wasn't going to bother them. And I'll grab that camera, or the card out of that camera. And so I jumped off, shut the quad off. I jumped off and I just was quickly running over to the camera, and she come, like, you know, you see those grizzlies on TV, yeah, where it's just their whole body is just like wave after wave. And that's what I saw her just galloping top speed right at me. And I just turned and I jumped onto my stand, and I climbed all the way up to the top of my stand, and she came right to the bottom of my stand and just flipping out. And so that was pretty scary. And I was like, holy, what am I going to do? And she walked back kind of where the cubs were up the tree. And then she kind of walked back where she had ran when I got there, but she was only 10 yards away from me. And I was like, I'm scared here. I don't know what I'm going to do. I didn't have any, you know, didn't have a shotgun, didn't have bear spray, didn't have nothing. I was in my shorts. So I kind of gave her her space, and she didn't leave. Like, she was staying that distance. She wasn't. So what I decided to do is, I knew that she was scared of my quad. So I slowly went down, you know, rung by rung on my ladder, and she wasn't coming at me again. So as soon as I got to where I got brave enough, I hopped off and jumped on my quad and started it. As soon as I did that, I knew she wheeled and gone, and I didn't even mess with the camera that time. I just backed out and drove out there. But I did go back that night. So she must have called the cubs down after I left, because they didn't come in that night. And that's the night I got that nice big boar of mine. But that's the one time that, you know, scared the hell out of me, because she was like, I still remember it. Like, it was like her whole body was like a wave, you know, her, you know, mm-hmm. muscles and hide was coming right down that. And she was probably 30 yards when she started galloping at me, and then came right to the end of my tree stand. And if she wanted to, she could have come right up the tree at me. Right. But she didn't.
Yeah. Oh, that's nuts, man. Yeah, I know that look. You know, the look of the bear when it's chasing you. It's nuts. It gets your heart going. That's for damn sure.
I had that twice in BC with grizzlies chasing me on the horse. So I know, I've seen that before.
Yeah, I've had it with a grizzly and with a black bear, but close calls. But luckily, nothing yet, knock on wood, but
I get a lot of bears that it's funny because the big bears don't mess with you. The big sows don't mess with you. It's always what I call the teenagers, the 1.5 year old, the 2 year olds, like sort of the, and it's almost always the males. Like they're the immatures, what I call teenagers. They're the ones that are always messing with you, but I get them climbing my stand all the time, like all the time. Like every year I have two or three that come right to the base of my stand all the time.
When you're in it?
Yeah. Oh, all the time. Last year I filmed with my phone and the little guy came right to my boots and I almost tapped him on the nose. And then the year before that, it came up the back of my tree stand and I had to smack him with one of my arrows. But
it's that kind of thing where you see those memes on social media with the little stick man up in the tree peeing on a bear's eye. Like if you're going to go out like a real man or the cool story anyway. Man, that's something else. That's close.
Yeah, that is crazy. So you mentioned your timing. What kind of time do you hit your stand in the evening?
In the evening, the beauty thing is the trail cameras are your best friend for when you're going to gauge your bears. But bears are, they're exactly like a whitetail. The big ones don't generally show up until just before dark and the little ones always do. So now I know there's exceptions to the rule. And I think back to the bears I shot the last few years and the bears I've taken have came in early, but they're usually kind of one-offs. Usually what happens is I go in the stand. So if I have a morning bear like War Pig, he likes 4 o'clock in the morning and he likes 9 o'clock at night. So what I try to do is I try to get in there by 3 and try to beat him. And so I'll go in the morning till about 7. And then I usually just, I'll go have breakfast and then I go get ready to bait my baits. And then I sleep in the afternoon and I have a late supper, an early supper. And I try to be in the stand by 5:30 every night, like clockwork. And that's so that I've got everything calmed down. I'm not moving around with my bag and got my bow hung up and all that kinds of stuff, because I've been caught where I got in late and the bears have already coming in and usually almost every time you scare away a small one anyways, which doesn't break my heart because lots of times they're eating your bait and you want the bigger ones to come. So I'm always in the stand by 5:30 and usually the best bear action for like the most coming and going is usually that 6:30 to 7:30 PM.
Right. Huh. So do the big ones, do they scare the little ones out? Or do you find like, if you get a lot of little guys, little young bears on your, like hitting your bait stands, and then all of a sudden you get like a big, you know, big mature bear, does he kind of rule the roost on that stand?
Yeah. Like, that's probably the thing that I talk about most when it comes to bear hunting is, you know, when we get into field judging and stuff like that and what a good bear and what a not a good bear is. One thing I like to talk about is the bears will let you know when there's another bear coming. I think that's why, you know, I'm a very excitable guy. If you tried to sit me down right now and I would be fidgeting and we'd be, you know, I'd be all over the place. That's just the type of guy I am. But for whatever reason, when it comes to bear hunting, I can sit there for hours without, you know, really moving or anything like that, because it's so interesting watching these bears. And it's so amazing that they will let you know when another bear's coming, and I don't know how they do it. So, because they're on the level, whereas I at least have the advantage of being up in a tree stand, they are on the level and they know to, like, all you have to, I always tell people that come with me that love to watch it. I'm like, you watch that bear at the barrel, it'll tell you when a bigger one's coming. And so usually what I say to people is don't shoot the first bear that you see, because they're all, it kind of works incrementally. Or like, there'll be a 150 pound bear show up and then a 200 pound bear will show up. And then like the 300 pound bear will show up. And then maybe the big sow will show up. And then, you know, they don't have to be told to leave the stand. I mean, there is a lot of fighting, especially with bears that are maybe the same size. But if you have say a 150 pound bear eating at your bait at say 6 o'clock at night, he'll snap his head up and nine times out of 10, they'll leave before the other bear comes in. So that's always like, you know, lots of times you'll be head bobbing and you're waiting for a bear because they're so quiet that generally you don't hear them coming, that you wait for the bears that are at the bait to give you that reaction. So you'll be half dozy sleeping and all of a sudden that bear will snap its head up. You know that there's something, you got to be ready. You know that there's something else coming. It might be just another bear the same size, but they will let you know. So generally what happens is a small bear comes in early, gets pushed off by another bear. And then I've had it where there's nine bears at one time. Wow. Now, not at the bait at one time, but nine bears in the perimeter, and they all have a pecking order. And so they, and not always the biggest bear is the guy that pushes him off. Like you'll get a really aggressive, you know, 2.5, 3 year old that'll push off a, you know, 7, 8 year old bear because he's super aggressive. But generally as they get, like when War Pig came in last year, like when I passed him up, there was five bears, like small bears, like 150 pounders on the bait. And they were, you know, mixing and fighting and carrying on. And when War Pig came, they just scattered. I think one or two stuck around because he didn't actually come to the barrel. So they will push the envelope. It's kind of cute to watch. Like the bears will push the envelope a little bit when it comes to when a bear comes in, either they're going to head for the hills or they're going to, you know, try to grab another piece of donut or something like that and wait till they get pushed off. It's kind of cute to see because they will push the envelope all the time.
Yeah, no doubt.
And they go around a tree or something, pretend like they're hiding. And then when the other bear is looking, they'll try to get in there.
Yeah, just to kind of determine the pecking order. I get it. Cool. So how long does a bait, like how long, what's the longest you can go without baiting your stand?
Well, it gets back to, like I said earlier, about how accessible you let them be with your bait. Because I put a 60-pound bag of grain in there. And a 200-pound bear in an hour and a half cleaned it out. So, so my nephew helps me. He likes to bait and he joins me a lot. And we've learned a lot together about, you know, when I'm there, I don't mind so much because I can fill it up the next day. But like right now, I always put barrels out there with just tiny little holes because you'd be amazed how they can get. Like I've got one there, it's got three beavers in it. And I know that it'll be cleaned out when I get there. And it's just got like 1.5-inch holes on it and just a few of those. And then what'll happen is when I come, I will cycle those barrels out where they could actually get their hand in there and pull stuff out. Oh, but right now I'm trying to do a couple of things. I'm trying to get the smell out there. So I'm trying to draw them in, and then I'm not really trying to feed them right now. I'm just trying to get them interested. And the biggest thing is I want them to get frustrated. I want them to move that barrel around as best they can. And then, you know, some grain will drop out or a donut will drop out, and then that'll just keep them coming. And it's just longevity. So when I'm there hunting, like I've got a couple of weeks off coming up here, and I'm going to spend some time in the stand, then I don't care. I'll swap a barrel out where they can tip it and dump it and stuff like that. Otherwise they'll clean me out tomorrow and then the bait will run empty for 5 days and we can't have that.
Right. So how long until the bears, they move off the bait? So like how long, if a bait sits empty where there's no food in it, how long will the bears stick around that stand before they just are like, well, there's nothing here?
Well, I've seen, and I know I've talked to lots of bear guys too, that they'll always come back to check it out. But remember, we're trying to be selective and we're trying to hunt the big boars. Yeah. So, and we've got the rut coming up right away, which is, works kind of for and against us, meaning that it'll be for, because the bears will start, or the boars will start coming around where the sows are. Really at right now, I'm trying to draw in, I know the guys will probably argue with me, but I'm trying to draw in as many sows as I can right now, because I know that eventually they're going to come into heat and they're going to draw the boars are, because, I guess right now I said to a buddy of mine that wanted to hunt a bear, I said, you know, if you want to kill a good 300-400 pound bear, now's the time to do it, because he's not rutting and he's going to come, you know, every day, the same time, to that bait. He's very, program him very well right now, or follow his habits. But soon as a sow comes in that comes into heat, he's going to take off with her. So, when they run dry, usually 2-3 days, they'll come back and then they'll move off and try look for another food source, because they call it the what do they call it? They call it the dandelion lull. When the dandelions start to bloom, your bears will just poof, they just disappear. And that's because they're eating all these green stuff and they love dandelions. And so they're between the rut, the dandelion lull, you'll see your early season, like right now, my baits, I wish I was there because they'd be getting smashed. And then as the towards the end of May, they're going to level off. And then they actually dip there when they hit that dandelion lull, where your bears actually kind of disappear. And then you want to try to bring them back in the rut. So you want to try to draw the sows in because they'll be following the sows. That's what I meant by I try to draw as many sows as I can in because I want to keep those boars around as long as I can.
Yeah, that it's makes like sense. Elk
too, I guess.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly. Like
you find the ladies, you know the boys are going to come around eventually.
That's right, exactly.
Guaranteed.
Yeah. So you talked a bit there, or you touched on it, field judging. Your field judging methods. Just walk me through that.
Well, for a black bear, so there's two things. Hunting baits. You know, when you're hunting in the wild, and you come across the bear, either it's a good bear, it's not. You don't really have the time to decide, is it a sow, is it a boar? I mean, it doesn't have cubs, so you don't know. It's 50-50. So lots of times it's go time when you're hunting black bears in BC, and I know I've guided them there. But here, you know, I'm not going to, you know what, I'm never slag somebody for taking a sow, but generally you want to hunt the boars. And so when it comes to field judging, what I always say to people is, especially sort of inexperienced, is the best way to field judge a bear is, first of all, to watch some bears. So if you're going to go hunt 4 or 5 days, your first day and a half, don't even consider shooting a bear, because you have to see these bears to start to field judge them. But on the surface, what I look for, first of all, I look for the body size. Like, I'm not even talking boar versus sow, but just a field judging them. I look at their size. A mature bear, I look at their head, and then I look at their shoulders of a boar, because a young one will have a sleek head and tiny shoulders, kind of like a sow. But even a 300-pound boar, that's you know, a nice size boar, he'll have bulky shoulders. And a buddy of mine taught me this, to look at their wrists. Actually, is where one of the most common ways to find out between a sow and a boar is to look at it. A sow, even a big heavy sow, will have narrow, front legs will taper down to a kind of a petite wrist, whereas a boar, even a 200 pounder, won't do that. They're kind of solid. And so I look at their head to look and see for their crease. And I did a little video about that, and I actually got my, this is my bear from last year. This is a 20 incher. And
that's a beauty.
Somebody asked me, and that's why I did that little video, was somebody asked me about, you know, what you look for. And I wanted to show people that there is no crease in a skull of a bear. And I think people, there was a misconception out there that males had a crease in their head, and that's how you identify a male from a female or a big bear. And so I wanted to show, this is smooth, right? There might be a little bit of a concave there, but nothing significant. And so what that crease comes from is from the amount of meat that comes right in these area right here causes that crease to happen. And in younger bears, it doesn't, that crease doesn't come because there's not much here. And as they get bigger and stronger, and just like humans, especially in the spring, you know, humans lose weight in their face first when they're losing weight. And when they're in the den for, you know, 3, 4, 5 months, they lose a lot of weight off their face. So usually I look at their head to see if it can see that crease. And then I look at their shoulders, and then I look at their hat. And that's how I sort of judge if that's a young bear or not. And then I move back to his belly. And generally what I like to do is I always compare him to the barrel. So usually, I mean, when a bear is walking in 50 yards away, I even use my binoculars at, you know, 15 yards away, because it really can help me detail the bear. But I can tell right away if, and usually I'm really good at saying that's probably a 3-year-old or a 4-year-old or something like that. And it all comes down to those features. Look at his head, look at his shoulders, look at their front feet. And then you also know, like a big bear will have a bit of a belly on him, whereas a younger bear won't have that. And then of course, when they walk up to your barrel, the sort of the unwritten rule is if their back of their If the bear reaches the top of the barrel, then you're looking at a mature bear.
Cool. Yeah, that's a good tip with the sows there.
Yeah. Well, you know, I never knew that tip actually until a couple, 3 years ago. And I was taught that. And now that's one of the main things I look for when I, like when you have a big sow coming in, usually, you know, with sows, I think 90% of the people field judge them by their ears. Yeah. And because a sow does definitively have a narrower, you know, where their nose is on their skull, they are definitively narrow, and then her nose is generally pointed, whereas boars don't do that. Their ears are normally a little offset and their nose are look a little stubby. And I just found out recently that the reason they look stubby isn't because they're shorter, it's because their face fills out in more than a sow.
Yeah You can definitely tell, like, if you were to just, you know, peel the hide off the skull of a young bear compared to like an older mature bear, you can tell the difference just in the how much meat is on that, you know, is on that skull. And, you know, the first time I did it, I couldn't believe it. I was blown away because, you know, you're just used to skinning no deer heads and that. And, you know, it's just a substantial amount of meat on that skull.
Well, you know, and one thing that I should talk about is bear guys refer to boars as a meathead. You probably heard this, a meathead or a bonehead. And what that means is their skull or their bone scores way better than it would be like that. You have a big bear that has a lot of fat or meat on there. So when they say a meathead, that means, they look big and blocky, but that just means there's a ton of, hide and fat and meat there. And then you'll get the bears that score very well, but they call them boneheads because they don't, you know, they're just bigger skulls. So, like my buddy Blair, he killed a 22 inch 1 year. And then the very next year he killed a 21, that was actually heavier than the 22. So he thought the skull would be bigger, but it was smaller. Cause they, you know, the one was a bonehead, one was a meathead.
Yeah. That's, those are big bears, big black bears, man. Yeah. Huge. 21, 22. That's a big, big bear.
And the 22, I want to say it was 22 and like 9 or 10/16, and it was a chocolate brown. He called it Brown Town. It's amazing, like, to see a brown bear like that. And then his the one the next year, the 21 and some, was jet black. He called him Blackjack.
Yeah.
Do you have a lot of color phase up there where you are?
A good
percentage?
I do. So last year, just with whole COVID and thing, and I only ran one bait, and that particular bait doesn't have a lot of color. It's mainly just black. But the other bait that I run, that I just because of sticking around home for COVID, I didn't want to run that bait. I had the year before, I had 9 color bears that were smaller that I had. Like, I kept saying, oh, that one, you know, in 2 years is going to be a really nice shooter. And here's the thing, like a bear like this, that's 20 over 20, that bear is probably 11, 12 years old. So, it takes those bears a quite a while to get that big. Like that war pig that I'm talking about, Blair Figures estimates him at 20 years old. Wow. And so like when I see, so this is how I do it. You know, when a sow has cubs, she always keeps her cubs for a year and a half, right? So she has them in the den in January and they're really, really small. They don't usually show up until May and they're just little basket bears. So they go all that year until the next year they go into the den with their mother. They come out, they're still there until that mom goes into heat, usually in May and June, right? So that now they're a year and a half old and they kick them out. So generally what I say is when they're with their mom, and unlike grizzlies that get pretty big when they're with their mom, black bears are usually around that 100 to 150 pounds when their mom kicks them loose. So what I normally say to people is if you see a bear by itself and it's small, but it's by itself, it's probably just been kicked out. Or so it's probably that 1.5 to 2 years old. So you're thinking, probably 150 pounds, maybe 200. So if you see a bear come in by itself right away, you can think that it's probably going to be 150 pound bear. And unless it's really, really skinny or really small, and you can tell, I mean, if it looks like a German Shepherd, you're probably around that 100 pounds, but usually when they're kicked out, they're around that 150 pounds. Yeah. So then I'm usually a pretty good judge of how old they are. So when a bear comes in, usually you can say, that's probably a 3-year-old bear and it's only maybe 225 pounds. Cause they say that they only gain about 25% per year, if that. And so, you see a bear this year, he might only be 25, 50 pounds next year, you know, depending on how the year went for him. So, when you get a big bear like this, you're talking 10, 15 years old. And so it takes a while to manage these bears. So that's why when I saw these color phases, I was like, oh man, in 5 years, that's going to be an amazing, you know, blonde or something like that. There was a brown bear that, it looked like a chocolate lab, and she was a sow, and she had two blonde cubs with her. Oh, yeah. I nicknamed her Sweet Chocolate, but she had two blonde cubs. So I was thinking to myself, in 7-8 years from now, if they survive, they're going to be amazing. So that bait alone had, I think I counted 9 different color, all small but different colors.
Oh, that's awesome.
Good. yeah I find in the area that I hunt, I see more color phase than regular, like the generic black bear.
Oh really?
Yeah.
So the baits that I run and the colors that I have, realistically, my kind of goal is, like, I'm not just there to shoot anything, but my goal is to get every color phase black bear. I have gotten a cinnamon. Granted, it was early in my career and it was pretty small, but I've got a cinnamon, I've got a black, I've passed up a couple of browns that I could have gotten that were smaller. So my plan is to, you know, before I'm done hunting these bears, that I want to try to get every color phase of black bear.
Nice.
That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've got a few areas out here where we've got quite the variety. I mean, grant you, it's overgrown. It is thick as shit. So a lot of times it's more like you're driving from point A to point B, or what, you know, if you're just going for a little scout and checking out some cut blocks or whatever. A lot of times you'll bump them off the road or as they're crossing and that. But yeah, I got to say, there's definitely some areas that have more color than others, but throughout our whole valley here, it's surprising how many colors you will see.
Well, I kind of made myself a promise that I wouldn't shoot a bear this year. Well, I'm going to try with a recurve this year. I've never done that before, but I sort of made a promise to myself that I was going to hunt war pig and try to harvest him before he dies or whatever happens to him. But I did say, if a big color comes in, I will take a big color, because I've got a 3/4 mount, black bear on my wall, and I'm getting this big guy into a rug, but I really want a really nice color. And my buddies keep saying, if I get war pig, it's going to cost me dearly, because I'll have to do a life size.
Yeah. That'd be cool. That's a big bear. How many bear are you allowed to harvest each year?
Saskatchewan, you can get 2, and in Manitoba, I can get 1.
Oh yeah. Okay. And it's in Saskatchewan too. You don't need, like, we could go out there and hunt as well, and you don't need a host, right? Yeah.
Right. Same with Manitoba. Like, I flip-flop between Manitoba and Saskatchewan. Same, Manitoba has the same rules that you can basically just buy a tag over the counter.
Yeah. Yeah. Really? Cool. Are they allowed baiting in Manitoba as well?
Yep.
Oh yeah. In Alberta, you're allowed to as well, but you need to be hosted. I think BC, what about Ontario? Do you know what they're, are they baiting out there? Or are they not?
You know what? I think that they can do fall bears. If I remember correctly, they got rid of the spring bear hunt, like, I want to say 10 years ago, and there's a big controversy on it. It might be back now though. Like, I'm just not 100% sure, but I know that they used to have spring bear hunting and then they got rid of it, but I think the population boomed. They might be back now, but I know you could fall bait them. And that's one thing. I don't do is fall bait.
Yeah. I don't generally hunt. I hunted bear last year with my bow. I was trying to get a nice big black bear with my bow. But I generally, in the fall, I generally don't go after bears.
Yeah. I generally don't either, because there's so much other things to hunt in the fall.
Yeah. I carry a tag with me just in case. One, you get that aggressive bear, it's acting weird, whatever the reasons are, and you have to do something about it. You don't have to worry about COs or anything like that. You know, it's just a legal harvest. And, or if something, you know, really nice does happen to walk in front of me, right, or I find it, well, I won't say no to it, but I'm definitely not, you know, going out in the morning and saying, I'm going to go hunt a bear in the fall time too.
My plan is, like I keep saying this year after year, is I'd love to hunt a fall bear, like spot and stalk, because I don't know if you guys know this, but the reason the bear hunting is so good is they're so destructive to farmers' fields, and the farmers can't stand them. They do way more damage than elk or anything like that. Really? And so they just, like, the farmers are more than willing to let you hunt on their land, because the canola is a big crop, and of course oats and stuff like that in that part of the country. And they, of course, you know what canola is like, you even look at it and it shatters or knocks off, and the bears go in the canola and they just sweep around and literally knock all the pods off the plants, and they can do a lot of damage. Like, one bear can do a lot of damage. So I've always said to the farmers, if I don't get a spring bear, that I want to go and stalk and spot, because when they're in out in the fields and the oat fields and stuff, there'll be 30, 40 bears in amongst the field. And so you can go spot and stalk really easy. I keep saying I'm going to do that. And if I don't get a bear, I'm going to definitely do that one of these years, because the farmers say they're just nuts how many are in the fields.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. See, I had no idea. Yeah. Like I said, when you think of Saskatchewan, you think of farmland, right? And so when you don't really see the correlation between big black bears and in the farmland, but I guess, yeah.
Well, we have a couple north of big forests that are the majority of my hunting goes on. Like, there's two big forests that the farmland butts up against. And so I'm just kind of lucky that I have friends that own land there. If I was to go in the, say, just in the middle of the wilderness, you'd still get bears, but you wouldn't get it as much as I would here, because the farmers are really the reason why all those bears are around. And nobody really hunts them.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. Yeah. There's definitely, well, I, in BC here, especially, I think that, this with the spring bear, it's gaining more popularity. I'm not sure about out there, but you just, in general, I think that's, you know, people are getting over the stigma of, you know, bear meat's no good. So,
right,
I think we're seeing a lot more of it.
I just had that conversation with a guy at work today, asked him if he wanted some bear meat to try, and he kind of snubbed his nose. And I said, anybody ever asked me, bear meat is in my top three favorite meats. It goes elk, moose, bear, beef, and then deer. Those are the three that I like the most, because bear to me is better than beef.
Yeah. There's just so much you can do with it. I by no means am a good cook, but still, I mean, there's lots you can do with it. Yeah, that's awesome.
I'd be curious on the taste difference between our bears and your bears. Just like, you know, like you harvest a deer out there off those off those fields and everything. Those deer are going to taste different than our deer. I'll guarantee it.
For sure. And like the bears that I'm shooting aren't garbage fed bears either. Like they're not eating the rotten stuff like some bears do. I found with bears in particular, they carry their taste in their fat, and the meat is the meat. And I always do mine fairly lean. So if you can get past what a bear sort of smells like and the greasiness of their fat, if you trim it, you know, I think your bears would be no different than mine. Now, now, granted, if they're fish fed, you know, I know that it goes into the fibers of the meat, but at the end of the day, I've had bear all over the province and even some in the States, and it's been the exact same. It's just the way you prepare it.
Yeah. 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 I agree. You know, you get the, like, I've had bear that's, you know, from the coast, and they eat a lot of fish and stuff. And I think that's what you said, is it's in the meat, it's in the fat, it's in the hide. It's not necessarily in the meat. And I think when you're breaking down an animal that's, you know, it was in a river eating some salmon, you're smelling that. So you're naturally thinking that, you know, that smell is coming out in the meat. When I'm sure if you had, you know, you did a Pepsi challenge, I'm sure the meat's going to taste exactly the same from an inland BC bear to a coastal BC bear. But
I have that. I have that argument all the time with guys and say mule deer and the odd antelope. We don't get to shoot antelope here very much. It's on the draw, but you know, people are like, especially the mule deer, oh, they're sagey or whatever. It's not the meat. It's the way you prepared it. And like, I think that it truly does carry its flavor, not flavor, the smell in the fat, because that's where everything hangs up, right? The meat itself is lean. There's no place for it to carry the flavor, but the fat is the opposite, right?
Yeah,
for sure. And bear, rightfully so. Like, if you don't trim, if I just handed somebody a backstrap that wasn't trimmed for bear, they would find it very probably repulsive, because if soon as you start trying to cook that bear fat, unless you know what you're expecting, it won't be a good experience. That's why I trim it really lean, and I don't have any issues with taste.
Yeah, right. Do you keep the fat? Do you do anything with it?
Yeah, we render it down. You know, the thing is that unless you're giving it away, you can get a lot out of a bear, like rendering it down. So I still have some from a couple bears ago. But yeah, we use a slow cooker and render it down and make it into a salve.
Okay. Yeah, that's one thing I got to get into more. You know, I've kept a little bit, but just for cooking with, but I've never kept it. I want to keep it and just use it, store it this year.
When you render little fat cubes down, it's kind of neat. Of course, YouTube is the best way to find the information on that. But when I did it, they call it crackle or something like that, or there's a nickname for it. It's kind of like it renders the fat renders down, and then the little chunks become like little crispy, like almost pork rind kind of things. Yeah. And they're actually taste really good. So guys really like them.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. I definitely got to get into that. One quick thing I want to talk about before we wrap this up is shot placement. Now, one of the things I learned quickly about hunting bears is that when you're aiming on a deer, you're ready to take down a deer, your shot is going to be a lot different than it is on a bear. You know, I when I first started hunting bears and just going after bears, I'd be aiming just behind the front shoulder, maybe a little bit low, same as a deer with, I had to do a lot of tracking with bears. I wasn't getting, you know, a dead bear within 10 to 30 yards. They die a lot further down the road. They die, but there's just, you know, meant I had to track them a lot more. And then accidentally one time I shot one center of center and the bear died in 10 yards. So the first thing I did when I shot that bear was I peeled it open and I look where the bullet hit. And I was amazed to find out the difference between a bear and a deer in that, or an elk or a moose, right? You know what I mean? Any ungulate is where you're, you know, if you're taking a broadside shot, or, you know, maybe it's a bit courting away, you're always going, you want to be behind that front shoulder a little bit. You know, even if you're a little bit low, that's fine. But with a bear, it's just, it's completely different.
Right. Like their anatomy, the way the innards are sort of configured isn't what you consider typical for, like you were saying, a deer. And you're right. Like, it's funny, cause when I got into bear hunting, I really got into it, and I did so much reading and trying to learn about them, that one particular study I read was that there's more bears wounded with a rifle than there are with bow. And the reason is where does a rifle hunter traditionally aim?
Yeah.
Just right behind, said, yeah. Right behind that front shoulder. And the thing with a bear is they have so much hide and fat that, you know, you, when you skin a bear, you'll be blown away at how sort of thin it looks. You know, I'm not going to compare it to anything other than it just looks thin. And you know, you went from this big 400 pound conglomerate to like a really skinny 200 pound carcass, and the reason being is because there's a lot of hide and a lot of fat there, and when they're standing, their front shoulders are really strong and their arms will block a lot of their vital areas. So what I say to everybody is kind of what you said. So I say point at the center of the bear and then go 4 inches towards the front shoulder, and you'll always, what we call, ventilate them. You'll always take the vitals out, guaranteed. There's no ands, ifs, or buts. Now, my very first bear, when I shot in Manitoba about 5 years ago, I knew that. I knew to aim, but for whatever reason, I went instinctively right back behind the shoulder, and I was up on in my tree stand, and my arrow didn't even pass through, but he did. He did expire quickly. I got him through the heart, but I remember looking at the video. I was like, man, it looked like a great shot, but it really wasn't. Had I not got the heart, it would have went right through the brisket area, and I probably would have lost that bear. So now every person I hunt with, I always say, just point to the middle of their body and then just go 4 inches to the left or right, whichever is closest to the shoulder. And you'll always have a dead bear within 20, 30 yards.
Yeah, now, when you're talking for hunters who haven't done bear hunting before, mm-hmm. and you're talking the middle of the body, are you talking about from the chest to the butt, or are you talking from nose to the butt?
No, the main part of their body, if that bear was standing broadside to me right now, and even somebody that's inexperienced, I said, point to the middle of its body. They would naturally go right to like their belly area. Right. Yeah. And then I would say, now go 4 inches to the right. What you think 4 inches would be, like that far. And, that's perfect area for it. You're guaranteed to either get double lung or at the very, there's no way you'll even catch the liver, because you'll be totally in the lung area. But if you go too far, and here's the thing, another thing that people, when it comes to shot placement on bears, is remember, you're usually 15, 18 feet high in a tree stand. And when you're shooting down on elevation, if you're not conscious of that center, if you're a little bit too high, you're going to miss it. And if you're too low, you're going to hit the belly. Now you might get a blood trail, but that bear won't perish right away because you're not really hitting the vitals. You'd be amazed that there's up to, 3 inches of hide and belly fat on a bear. And then you add the how long their hair is on top of that, you're looking at 3, 4, 5 inches sometimes that you think is shootable, but it's actually not. It'll be a bad shot. So even inexperienced people, I say, I always show them a picture and I say, point to the center of the body. And they always point kind of right in the middle of the belly. And then I say, now go to close to the front shoulder and remember. And remember that. And that's how I tell people. I mean, there's nothing wrong with people say the middle, but nothing wrong with that. I just say add 4 inches to whatever, and you'll always get it.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. That's one thing I learned fast, and hunting bears by myself was the shot placement. It's funny, 'cause like how you said it, you naturally shooting deer for a while and elk and ungulates, your natural instinct is to go for that front shoulder. And it's funny, like even if you put a scope up or you put your pin on a bear, it's just funny because like the first thing I find happens is that crosshair or that pin goes right but in the same spot it would be if it was a deer.
And that I was saying there a few minutes ago that more bears are lost with rifles. And that's because if you go behind the shoulder and you don't hit the vitals, that arrow or that bullet's zipping right through. And, and there's a good chance that he will die eventually, but it won't be recovered right away because it's not doing a lot of trauma. That's why I think archery is so, for bear hunting, especially for, baiting them. I'm not an outfitter. I don't make a living at this, and it's all a hobby, but I'll take just about anybody bear hunting. I'll do the work. I usually just say, if you want to help out, get some bait, blah, blah, blah. But I always say it's always bow hunting for me because you're at a bait, you're bringing the bears in to begin with. And it's selective hunting. You're trying to take the mature boars. So I say, knowing that rifle hunting wounds more, get yourself a bow and an arrow and practice. And we haven't lost one bear yet with an archery on any of the baits that I run.
That's awesome. That's good.
Yeah. Plus bear hunting or bow hunting for bears is just so much fun.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And my baits in particular, I don't know if it's just the way things worked out, but none of my baits are over 12 yards long. So they're 10 yards and under. So this year, like I said, I might do a ground blind to try to do a recurve hunt. Oh, yeah. But we'll see. I haven't done a ton of practice with it.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. That'd be fun. Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of hunting on the ground by myself either.
Oh no. Yeah. I guess. Yeah. I'm the opposite.
I think it'd be a little different having that many bears, and like you say, I mean, most you don't have to worry about, but it's those odd ducks. And yeah, if you're, you definitely feel more secure up.
Well, if I had one of you guys in with me or anybody, I would have nerves of steel, right? But just sitting by yourself and not knowing there's one behind you and then beside you. And like, yeah, it's a little bit nerve wracking. So I have to practice. I'm going to go up on, in about 4 days, I'm going to go up and refresh and maybe hunt for a day or two, but the hunting for me really doesn't start till the last week of May.
Oh yeah. 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 This is, I had to start getting serious about it here. This is, I mean, we've still got a bit of time. We got till the end of June out here to go. And then, yeah, usually about the end of May, early June, that's when I find things start really heating up out here.
Same with us. We can hunt to the end of June, but I've never shot a bear late, but there again, you run into the chance of having your bear, start to rub. And, to me, there's nothing other than unless you're sustenance hunting for meat, there's nothing worse than hunting a bear where you shoot it and then you're disgusted that it's rubbed and then you don't have nothing to do with it. Right. So, I always make sure that our bears are nice and clean before we shoot them, because I don't want anybody like, oh, I'm just throw the hide in the garbage. Well,
why'd you
shoot them to begin with then?
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely, when you shoot a bear, you definitely, the hide is, you know, it's so valuable. You don't want to be chucking that. The meat obviously is why you're doing it in the first place, but you know, the hide is, that's an added bonus, I think.
Well, just the pictures, even with a rub bear, it just doesn't make good field pictures or anything like that. But
yeah, I've never shot one, but I know other guys who've gone later in the year, and they've tagged rub bears, and yeah, they just don't look the same. Yeah.
Right.
Thanks a lot for hopping on the show, man. Like I said, you and I have been, we've been chatting back and forth for a while now. And I think even, you know, when I first started this show, man, almost two years ago that I reached out and you were more than willing to come on the show, and then things get busy and then hunting starts and then, you know, the process seems to repeat, but I really appreciate you taking a bit of time to talk with us.
No problem. I enjoy everything I do is to try to help other people, and especially newer hunters or people that are just getting into the outdoors. I know what it's like to fumble my way along and not have somebody to help me. So that's why I love sharing information. And like I said, bears and elk are kind of my thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's awesome that, you know, that's one of the things is with these older guys, you know, calling her quits. We need those new and young hunters out there. So where can everybody find your content, follow you, all that stuff?
Oh, well, I'm a bit of a social media guru. They can get a hold of my personal account, which is Marcus Simons on Facebook. I do have a couple of Facebook. I got a Pro Staff or Cabela's Bass Pro Facebook page. And I have kind of like what you guys do. I have my own little podcast sort of, it's called All Outdoors with Muck Simons. And Instagram is just Muck_Simons. And yeah, look me up, and I pretty much friend anybody. So
right on. I'll throw all that stuff up in the show notes too. And, you know, access to the stuff you got for YouTube and all that stuff. You got anything to add, Pete?
No, just thanks for some of the tips there, you know, field judging, stuff like that. I'm going to go out this weekend, I think, for a day. Just bow's not ready, but I'll take the rifle out and go do some scouting and maybe be able to eye up something half decent.
So I got two tips that I'll leave your listeners with when it comes to bears. The one is, don't shoot the first bear you see. And the second one is, try your best to look over 5 or 6 bears before you shoot it, because that's the key. Once you let that first one go and you have a chance to field judge a few, you will know when there's a shooter bear come in. You'll know like that. That's what I always tell everybody is, if you don't shoot the first one that comes in, because that happens a lot in Saskatchewan here, more bears are shot, like more sows and more immature bears are shot because the first one comes in and it looks huge to everybody. But when that, if you give yourself a little bit of time to look over them, you will know when a big bear comes in and you'll know which one's right.
Yeah. It's not easy to let animals pass, especially for new hunters, but I think the more you do it, the easier it gets until it doesn't. I'm still weeping over a elk I passed on this year at 50 yards looking for another one. But
well, my friends will not let me down for letting War Pig, because he'll be probably in the top 5 bears shot in the province. Like, and wow. I said, there was a couple of reasons, but I'll get them this year. I'm hoping to. So
yeah. Well, best of luck to you, buddy. Yeah.
Thanks guys.
Absolutely. Okay, man. Thanks a lot. And Pete, we'll talk to you soon.
You betcha. Have a good one, bud.
again, everyone, for tuning in to the Focus Hunting Podcast. It's coming at you as part of the Waypoint Outdoor Collective. Quick shout out to the sponsors of the show, Vortex Optics, the best in optics, period. Backroads Maps Books, never get lost with Backroads Maps. AKU Boots, you owe it to your feet. Scree Hunting Gear. Now, if you guys check the show notes, you're going to find some promo codes. Use them, save a bit. Love you guys. Talk to you soon.
Miss Mondays with Into the Blue, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Every Monday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment. Join Captain Justin Leake and Meredith McCord for the best fishing action along Panama City Beach. Tune in to Chasing the Sun every Sunday at 9:30 a.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.